Welcome back to the last hour of the Hard Shoulders output for the entire week. Every Friday at between 6 and 7, we review the week with the final furlong. And I want to give a particular welcome to my three victims today. Niamh Horan, journalist with the Sunday Independent. Richie Oakley, he's still editor with the Ireland edition of The Times. I'm not too quizzical about that. And Mairead Lavery, it's a great pleasure to welcome back. We used to have her in the mornings and now she's so busy with other people. She is deigned to visit us. She is the editor of Country Living, which is the central piece of the Farmer's Journal, the Irish Country magazine in the Farmer's Journal, out every Thursday. Now, you're all welcome. We look back at the past 7 days and see what tickled our fancy. Well, what tickled my fancy, first of all, before we get into the serious news of the week, is St. Bridget's Day, the 1st of February, and I'm looking out, that was yesterday, looking out the window, and I see that spring has sprung. And I am so excited. We got the Six Nations. We have the best ever Leopardstown Dublin Racing Festival. It's all coming at you. The winter is over. Are you out of hibernation?
Absolutely. Yeah, but I love snowdrops. They're my favourite flowers. And for the last month, they've been coming up and they're now, the flowers are out. They're absolutely gorgeous. They put joy in your heart. Everybody should have a bunch of snowdrops.
But
in
May,
garden.
You say you like the begonias and, you know,
no,
the
begonias
March, you
are
you
not.
Like
they're
the daffodils. In
no.
August, you like
no, no,
the
no,
roses.
No, just it's January. The frost is on the ground. The snow is on the ground. Nobody wants to go out. And all of a sudden, these little flowers start coming through and they have these little spears, literally, that come up through the hard ground. And you've got this amazing run of colour. And there's people out
white
there.
White and purple and...
No, they're white with lots of this little kind of flecks
orangey.
Of green.
Oh,
no, flecks of green. And there are people who will pay enormous amounts of money. Talk about the tulip kind of, you know, tulip bulbs way back in the 1700s. Yeah.
You don't have to monetize everything.
Yeah, but
I mean, like, why not just the beauty of it?
No, they want just not the one common one. They want all the little varieties of them. And you can
and
have
by God, will
there
you
are people
sell it
in this country with about 500 varieties.
Richie, have you been out gardening yet? Or have you noticed that?
I've been out running a bit, but I am really looking forward to just sitting in and watching one rugby match after another.
Okay.
And I think this year Ireland have more or less a decent chance. I think we're definitely going to beat France. I have a size.
It's between Ireland and England. Yeah.
Yeah.
With the new manager
hopefully.
And everything.
And the problem is that the key match is in Twickenham. They have home advantage for that. But I do agree with you. And
we're better to beat them.
Now we're unbeatable at the Aviva. That's where we're at now after the autumn international. So, and is that all? Just rugby?
No, I'm actually going rowing in the morning as well.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Only could you ask a boy about spring and flowers and he comes back with rugby.
You need to see a therapist. Okay. Niamh, what does spring mean to you? Or are you, do you prefer summer? Like, do you get the sense of new life, new
definitely.
Vigor?
So, do you know what's great? It's walking to work for the first time this morning and the sun was, or the light was out. You know, you're not going to work when it's dark and coming home when it's
I'm
dark.
I'm amazed
you know?
Call fabulous it work.
Moon. But there's a fabulous did you see the moon out this morning?
Stunning.
8 o'clock, there was an
it's a blue moon out Wednesday night. City one again. Yes, yeah. Now, so you have this sense of new awakening. Because
like
my mood actually lifts with the brightness.
Yeah,
I'm definitely one of those. Okay, well, let's put a dampener on it. The rural broadband scheme is in tatters. The rural Ireland, the first can turn out the lights now in terms of these disarray about the national planning framework. This is a new 40-year vision for the country, which will set out our capital spending. Well, Alan Kelly, the Labour TD and wannabe Labour leader, was on the show, The Hard Shoulder, talking about he wants this halted because it's too Dublin-centric.
This plan has an opportunity to be disruptive in a positive way. I'll give you an example of something that happened many years ago, which was disruptive and positive. Shannon Town never existed. The Shannon Free Zone never existed. Thousands of jobs exist there today. Over 10,000 people live there and 40% of our FDI comes through Shannon Airport. That was a disruptive technique that worked. We need a vision for Ireland, which is going to be disruptive to deal with the infrastructural issues, the issues across our economy and across our country. We need to grow the cities, absolutely grow the cities. We need to grow Dublin, but we need to do it in a way that deals with the issues we all know that are there. But also, you cannot have a situation. You can't have a situation where large-scale towns across the country are actually going to be disintermediated.
Right, he's
There's
wrong.
There's a new word.
Well, no, he's wrong at so many levels there, because I remember the Shannon stopover for 1 and 2, and then 1 and 3 flights had to stop in Shannon. And you know what people said? Well, actually, we won't come to Ireland if that's the way you're going to be about
it. Yeah, but so, it brought in a lot of jobs to the whole region.
But the market didn't want to go there, so it couldn't be sustained. You are in favour of putting good money after bad, getting the most rural parts of Ireland and stuffing it full of pork barrel politics. Isn't this your view, Mairead? You're against developing our cities.
And you're saying that with a great big grin on your face, Ivan.
Yeah. No, guilty as
charged. Listen to me. What's going on at the moment is they've built cities with 1 million people in China faster than they've put together the broadband plan that we have for the country. I mean, 5.5 years they've been in a tender process. The two key players, the ESB with the Vodafone Project Ciro and Air now, have both pulled out. They've access to every home in the country. This was a relatively simple exercise because the wires were going already. All they had to do was tap into the lines. Now you've got eNet. We don't know what exactly its capability is. Instead of having a tender process, we have a monopoly. Basically, they have the government over the barrel. This evening, right now here, there are tens of thousands of people making a break for the border again. Every M road out of Dublin is packed with people who are having to head home to the country, a lot of whom don't have to have their backside sitting on seats above in Dublin, because if they had proper broadband, they'd be able to do their work from home, or they'd be able to stay at least 3 or 4 days down the country and come up to report in maybe once a week.
Okay.
I mean, that's the reality.
Isn't it? Hold on a second.
The N7 now, right now, I guarantee you, there are people who are absolutely fuming and going to have to take maybe an hour and a half to go about 15 kilometres.
Now, you're absolutely right about a lot of that. But just on the broadband issue, you know, if you dig a little deeper, you'll find that Air actually cherry picked the best 300,000 customers, the ones nearest to the towns and cities that the fibre is with, you know, higher density and so on. Mm. It's not that Air aren't in the business. They still have 76,000 kilometres of fibre in the ground, which eNet are going to use. It's a little bit more complicated than you painted it.
Well, it is. Of course, it's a bit more complicated. Air wouldn't have spent 7 million euro on this tender process, like 7 million euro on the tender process before you even get to the stage of having your full tender in. That seems
so. You said too much bureaucracy.
Too much bureaucracy. Something that's going on for what, 5.5 years? As I said, cities in Japan or in China with 1 million people are built faster.
But on the central point, do the people in the most remote parts of Ireland, are they entitled to a hospital at every crossroads and every public facility?
Of course they're not. But they are entitled to broadband. Okay. Broadband is the electricity of the 21st century.
Richie.
And it's the equivalent of saying, just because you live in Connemara or you live somewhere like that, you're not entitled to electricity or a phone.
Colchie, when are we going to stand up to Colchie's crying in this country, Richie?
Well, the project has been mismanaged, and Mairead is right. They do deserve broadband, and people definitely need it. I mean, it is the equivalent to electricity and telephone lines nowadays. And it is crazy that we're like 5 years down the road. We still don't know when it is even going to start. And the speeds they're talking about are going to be probably outdated by the time it arrives. So,
we've discussed broadband. My point is
there's a wider issue. The very same
Alan Kelly insisted as Transport Minister that a train be kept open, and worked out, they divided the total subsidy into the number of passengers, and for every passenger journey there was a state subsidy of 900 euros. We have to cry halt to our country cousins and their pork barrel politics.
There is a wider issue of trying to spread everything around the country all the time, and there has been plans that have said focus on individual cities. We had a national spatial strategy at one stage that basically was ridiculous because it was spread everything out. Charlie McCreevy came along with decentralisation, send civil servants all over the country. That was never going to work. It was never going to have a positive development. You were taking them out of places where they were already centralised. We also have to look at planning in this country. We have a situation where we allowed people build one-off houses in the middle of nowhere, and then those people turned around and they said, where's our roads? Where's our electricity? Where's our sewage? Where's our water? Where's all these products? How come we can't be secure at night with security? Now, you do need to let farmers live on their land before Americans in.
But people have to realise
that the best planning, the way other countries do it, the way we should have been doing it all along, is you try and get people to live in clusters so you can provide services. And if a lot of the problem with these places is you're having to bring wires all over the country from main roads right up the side of a hill to get a certain person broadband.
There's big towns, and 50 metres outside the town limit you can't get broadband.
Okay. No, but I mean, it's going to be easier to bring it to those towns than the homes of Horne.
And the issue is this, that your generations like city life.
Absolutely. God, I could think of nothing worse than going down the country. And going down the country, you know, internet is even worse. But actually, I wonder why country people want the interview.
Like,
want,
literally, you couldn't survive. Down
I get itchy without internet access. No, but I wonder why country folk want internet access so badly. It's a scourge on their humanity. Are they not cottoning on to the latest memo? Have they not got it? That it's driving us all insane. We're all trying to get off our mobile phones. It's like literally it's destroyed modern life
media,
and we're all trying to go back to a more simple way.
We protect the Colleens at the crossroads.
I've tried
sounds like Dev tried that.
Yes, I know exactly.
I downloaded an app called Moment to check my phone usage and internet usage, and it just terrified me. So I've been reading, I haven't been on social media or anything all year. I've been reading books. I know it's only the end of January.
You've had a dry Wi-Fi January.
Yes, exactly, yeah, a Jai-Fi.
And you're looking so refreshed and
I feel
happy.
Yeah, do you know what my mind
is?
Taking
years off.
Do you know what? No, genuinely, I feel. Do you know that fog, that mind fog that you have when you're constantly like refreshing the bloody Daily Mail and that, or the Irish Independent.
The bloody Daily Mail and the Irish Independent.
But then when you step back from that,
there's a Times edition. The Irish edition. I can never get my head around that. All right, let's move on to something that will be right up your street. Have you heard of? This is a real Yankee doodle. An emotional support pet. Apparently they're very common in the States. You can bring your pet on a flight with you to keep you calm. Well, this week, and the reason we discussed it, Dexter, who's a peacock, was actually taken off a flight. Apparently when a peacock gets aroused, Mairead Lavery, the feathers go straight up in the air.
Well,
and
probably,
this was
yes.
too much for some passengers. And in another case, there was a pig. And apparently it did its business all over the place and they had to take it off it. You know, right. the manure problem.
The day when we potty train piggies.
Being, you know, a good relationship with animals and
yes.
loving animals and all that kind of good stuff down on the land, you must relate to this emotional support pets.
Yeah, they can go in the hold. As far as I'm concerned.
Oh, your pussy or your pooch can go in the hold, can
Absolutely,
it?
Yeah. The idea of bringing snakes or tarantulas or anything like that onto a plane, my God almighty, it's terrifying enough without having to do something like that. I couldn't believe it. Now, I don't know what happens,
well, what about
but if you have
the
a
travel.
Dog, if you have, a, you know, if you're, you know, short or, you know, your sight isn't good and you have a support dog, or maybe, you know, with the way some children on the autistic spectrum, you know, the Labradors
yeah.
are a real big help to them.
Dogs, yeah.
Now, I don't know whether there's an exemption with those kind of dogs. And they're generally very, very well behaved.
What's your general take on these exotic things? Leave aside the travel. Do you think it's valid?
That people
can have an emotional support pet? Or is it just one of these Americanisms?
Believe it or not, I had a peacock called Peter.
Did you?
I did.
A male one? What did it do for you?
Well, no, it was not. He did for his mother, who was a little hen, a little clucking hen, and she hatched him out. And he idolised her. And the second year of her life, when he had grown up a bit, she hatched out a batch of ducks, little ducklings. And the ducklings, of course, love water.
So is a duckling a baby peacock?
No, a duckling is a baby duck. But she hatched, she didn't lay the eggs, she hatched
she
them out.
Them.
Yeah, no, she sat on them and she incubated them and hatched them out. But the ducklings had run down to
I
the
feel
stream.
A feature in Irish country living
no,
coming on
yeah.
here.
But the ducklings had run down to the stream and get into the water, and Mummy Hen and the peacock, Peter, would be parading around.
They don't like water.
Absolutely can't stand water.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had no control over the ducklings. It used to be so funny.
So how would you react, Richie, if you had a peacock on the seat beside you in the plane and it got aroused?
No, that's not going to happen. I would be changing seats fairly quickly. I have had some horrific...
Well, you're fine looking young man. A lot of people, after your appearance on Cutting Edge, were tweeting that you're a very fine
oh,
man.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I've had
he
horrific...
He doesn't deny it, no.
He's just blushing. Carry on.
The worst experience I ever had, had on a flight was a different type of animal altogether. It was an oil rig worker who had been on a shift for like 10 months in Australia, and he was coming off this oil rig thing, and he was flying home, and I think he was going to England, and I was going to and that flight is like 32 hours. Mm. So he started drinking, and he just drank about 20 cans in a row. He started saying, "Irish boy fancies you, a lady," and he was inviting them down to have a party with us. He'd fall asleep, he'd wake up, he'd have another can of beer, and when we stopped at the stopover, the air hostesses moved me to get away from him, and he right. spent about 20 minutes looking for me when he arrived back.
Like, it was horrific. Would you complain? Did you complain, or like, he was bigger than you?
No, they volunteered to move me.
Yeah, but no, did you just give dirty looks to the hostesses, or how did you communicate your angst?
I just was kind of making facial gestures in the Irish kind of Asher.
Yeah, brand. Raising your eyes to heaven, and
then once he was dealt with, then these guys went crazy on the flight, and at our next stop, a lot of security guys came on with rifles and decided to escort these guys off. So by the time I arrived back after the 32-hour flight, it was pretty right. amazing. But
a peacock could be a breeze. I could take
a peacock.
Okay, Niamh. First of all, what's your line on emotional support pets? Do you get it that people are so isolated in this social media age, so lonely, so introverted, that they might need a peacock or a pig to talk to?
But on a plane, I mean, I'm a big believer in drugs. Just take the drugs if you're on a plane and you just need to calm down a little bit.
Drugs? What drugs?
Then, you know, a little Valium Xanax. Never hurt anyone on a flight from here to long haul wherever, you know. And I just, if it just calms your nerves a bit. And you're not going to kind of harm anybody around you. Although I have sat beside worse than a pig or a peacock on some flights. No, I joke. I would take the drugs. I know people who do, and they're just fine, or they sleep.
Have you ever had a pet as a child?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Mandy, a cat, and Fluffy, a Shih Tzu as well. I got
dog. Had a Shih Tzu and a pussy.
Yeah, and I got, and yeah, I actually had the most, it ended terribly, but we can't mention it on air.
How did it end?
I know, it's.
They died.
It's actually quite pornographic. It actually was one of my most.
The two of them got it together.
It was one of my more traumatic childhood experiences, so I don't go there again.
The dog and the cat. Nah,
my cat was passing away from cancer slowly and very agonizingly out the back, and I loved Mandy. I had her for about maybe 7, 8, 9 years. She was.
And
just
was this a family pet or your pet?
My cat. Like,
so
I used
what
to
did the Shih Tzu
dress
do
her
to
in
the,
like
the
Cabbage
pussy.
Patch Kids cardigans and nappies, and I just doted on her. And I didn't really like the dog. And then the dog took advantage of the cat as she was passing away into the next world. And I saw the whole aggressively horrible thing unfold on my patio.
The image of that now.
That was totally horrific.
Scar you for life.
You never cease to amaze me with the stories that you come up with. Well, look, there's lots more. We're going to take a break here on The Hard Shoulder. Mairead Lavery, Richie Oakley and Niamh Horan and her assorted problems and pets are staying with us. We're going to be trying to procure a solution to Ireland's woes in the Eurovision. Stay tuned to The Hard Shoulder. Welcome back to The Final Furlong here on The Hard Shoulder. My panellists today, Niamh Horan, journalist with the Sunday Independent, Richie Oakley, editor of the Ireland edition of The Times, and Mairead Lavery, editor of the Irish Country Living and the Irish Country Magazine and the Farmer's Journal and whatever you're having yourself. Thank you very much indeed. Now, we want to move on to this bar in New York. It's called, I think, the Continental Bar. And they put a sign up in the window to ask customers to kindly refrain from using the word literally. Now, not literally as in the term that it was meant for, using it in every sentence as an adjective. Customers who are inside and say literally have 5 minutes to finish their drinks and get out. Well, apparently, the people to blame are this lot.
Literally,
gonna strangle her.
Totally,
such a good idea.
Seriously.
I mean, seriously?
So, what we have, Mairead, is a problem with this generation that they've added in, you know, kind of like extra drama words like literally, like seriously, like so, with six O's on it. Is this bar right to ban them?
Look, the guy has taken no action against anybody yet. He's getting plenty of publicity out of it. He's even advertising, I think, six shots, $12. So it must be
so
the cheapest
bar. So you think this is a cynical marketing exercise?
I think it's a great marketing exercise. Of course it is. Now, I'm in full agreement with him with all these literallys. I have my own few favourites. The reality is, when spoken by politicians, and they generally haven't a clue what the reality is.
Yeah.
And particularly when it comes to rural Ireland, there's a place called Dlacamara. It's some kind of Yankee Doodle film.
It's a euphemism for the middle of nowhere.
Well,
no,
it's this whole thing about calling rural Ireland quaint or isolated. You can be isolated living in an apartment block in Dublin 4 just as much as you can down in the back of Kerry. But quaint and isolated.
No, but hold on a second.
There are two words I'd ban.
Surely. The English language has been mangled to death by people trying to hype everything up in their sentences, and it's actually not right.
It's not right, but the English language is kind of a bastardization.
Like, we've gone a long way from Shakespeare. Like, the times
Shakespeare
are...
invented most words.
Okay.
And, I mean, it was the ability of the English language to actually accept and take in these changes that made it stay the way, you know, grow and become so popular.
You see, standards have slipped, Richie. I mean, you're from the times. Like, we're talking proper writing and reading.
Well, we printed an emoji recently as part of an article that we wrote that it was one of the most universal languages now, and that this could actually be the universal language that people have sought for years. And someone wrote in and said, I'm going to believe that when I see an emoji printed in the times, and they put in the little emoji, and we did print it. I'm absolutely useless at discussing anything in emojis. I pick the wrong one at every stage. But the literally, that's a generation, isn't it? And people grow out of that when they realise that they can't write that in anything they're doing in work or in business, I'd imagine. But then business has its own absolute mess of a language, and the jargon stuff that you get there is among...
See, another thing that's really gone is spelling. People use text spelling, you know, for things, and, you know, A-R-E becomes R and C becomes C and U becomes Y, is it a Y-O-U? Like... This is a very dangerous trend, surely.
Yeah,
the language as we know it.
Text talk then becomes real speak as well. Like, lol, that's my ultimate one when people use that in the middle of conversations. But yeah, I think text messages, emoji, have destroyed the English language, and we're going to go back there again. I mean, you remember the pictures on the walls of cavemen years ago? It's just going to go that way again, it looks like.
Do you use any of these words, like literally and like?
No.
And
I have my own annoying tics that pick me up on that I try and...
Go on.
So before I ask a question, can I ask a question? And when I finish a sentence, I say, do you get me? There's no need.
Do you get me? People who are constantly asking, are you with me? Are you with me? Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. And is that because you need reassurance?
Yeah, maybe.
Right. Okay. Delicate flower we have here. I mean, you come across as a hard-ass journalist that, you know what I mean, would go through anyone to get your story. I mean,
I'll still do that.
You're giving us the, do you get me? You know, kind of, that you need reassurance.
This is the great thing about print. I mean, I waffle a lot, and I would say, you know, I'd talk a lot in interviews, you know, that you wouldn't want to see it in print, you know, the different turns of phrases that you use, which is the good thing, that you can kind of keep them out and you can make yourself see.
Okay, well, now, all eyes are on Melania Trump. I alluded to this earlier. It was Trump's speech, but it was Melania that raised the question. She didn't travel with Trumpy to the House of Congress for his State of the Union address. She travelled separately, which has never been done before by the First Lady. She cancelled her trip to accompany him to the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. Instead, she flew to Mar-a-Lago, is it? That's in Florida, is it? The holiday home they have there. The Winter White House, where she spent part of her short trip relaxing in a spa, as you do, after recent reports of a payment to an alleged mistress. Mrs. Trump has stayed silent. Well, that got us thinking here on The Hard Shoulder. And on Mondays at 5:30, my relationship guru expert, Stephanie Regan, who is a clinical psycho-whatever, comes in to me, a professional in this area, and discussed the issue of runaway funds.
It's a simple stash of money that nobody knows anything about and that you can... You can make choices with, I suppose, you can if you're in a sticky situation. So it's not quite like a rainy day fund where we say, as a couple, you've saved, you put stuff, you know, you've put money away and you know, that's in case things go wrong together. No, this is quite different. This is my running away money. This is money stashed, which is separate and secret. You wouldn't
buy a pair of shoes with it.
No, the origin of it was for the runaway money. But now it is about having secret money. Money that your husband dash partner does not know about and that he doesn't get told about.
Right, we were inundated in the show with people saying, yeah, my mother told me to keep a runaway fund. Mm. This is a traditional thing whereby, you know, it's a kind of safety valve if things go wrong. And this was back in the day when maybe there was only one income in the family. Back in the day when a woman might have been a chattel of her husband.
Yeah,
are you familiar with a runaway fund?
Absolutely, yeah. I had an elderly cousin. Well, she was elderly when I knew her. I used to call her, well, she was my Auntie Ina. And she always advised to have, it was not a rainy day fund or a holiday fund or a Christmas fund. It was your runaway money. And nobody was to know about it. And every week from the housekeeping, you were to take so much and make sure that you would build up this fund so that if things went wrong, you had a way out.
And did Mairead do this?
No, I didn't. I had a joint bank account.
Mairead has a lockup out in the Nace Road.
Right to the
my
drugger.
My husband knows all my financial secrets.
You're right. She's got a lockup in the Nace Road. Land Rover Defender, sorry, five passports.
What's your take on financial infidelity of this nature? Because it's secret.
Well, nowadays, I think more and more couples seem to have individual accounts. And when it comes to the mortgage, they both lodge in. And, you know, when it comes to all the utility bills, he pays this, she pays that. Or he and he pays, whichever way it works. And, you know, people seem to be keeping their accounts on their own.
Because I was saying on the programme what happened when I got married in December 85 and Deirdre moved in and we hadn't been living together. She put her teaching money into her own account and every penny I earned went into her joint account. But she dealt with all the bills.
Right.
So I don't know what happened to her money. Like what was mine was ours. And she's obviously got her runaway
smart
fund.
Girl.
Yeah.
Nowadays when people get together, I think they're kind of older and their finances are kind of complicated in and of themselves. So they don't really then end up kind of going for just like the one account with everything coming out of it. But as well, they're both earning. So you want the earnings kind of going into separate accounts. So I think just by the time people get married now, they're so much later on in life that they just, it's too complicated to
you
go
think
and
this is
get
out
them
of
all
date
into
now.
One account. I think so, yeah. But then again, I have friends who would have very healthy marriages and they have one account and everything comes out of it. And that's quite impressive. When they told me about that, I was like, wow, that's kind of impressive that you can do that.
Right. It simplifies things, though. Because, you know, you've standing orders for utilities and rents and
all
that.
Not kind.
I would
woman
be dreading
in the country,
like spending the money by mistake or something.
There
and
isn't
then
a woman in the country who hasn't bought something and told her husband, I got that thing about 3 months ago
that's
or
exactly
6 months
right.
ago.
That's
or
right.
I bought it on the sales.
Yeah.
Like, how do you justify, you know, €50 or €80 or €100 or whatever it is, you know, and you bought something.
Every new outfit, Deirdre says, I got that
ages ago.
I told you about that, but you've seen it and I've never seen it before.
In the sale.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's the hideaway money.
So, Niamh, I'm fascinated by any of your insights into this insofar as that, you know, it sounds a little bit prehistoric and it seems to be like you heard the auntie there. It was passed down from one generation to the next. Is it something you've heard tell of, even?
I have, but shockingly bad relationship advice, whoever that woman is coming on your show. Terrible.
Stephanie.
Yeah. And I
in what way?
Shockingly unfair on the men as well. Why be in a relationship if you need a runaway fund? If you have one of those, then you need to question the relationship that you're in. I would absolutely say that my mum always said, never depend on anybody financially, always be financially independent. And so that's not a little runaway fund that's going to get me on a plane and going to get me a couple of weeks. That's actually just looking after yourself. You know, and so I would say on, you know, just be financially independent so that you just don't need to rely on anybody else.
So if you found yourself in
a runaway fund, imagine if men came on and said, yeah, we have a runaway fund and they start talking about this, there'd be uproar. And just why is it okay for women to have?
And what about Melania? Do you think she will run away?
And also, yeah, I have a relationship expert talking on two people that they've never met as well. I think it's so funny that they've turned that into a negative. I think Melania has shown that she's her own independent woman. Maybe it just didn't suit her to go to Davos. Maybe it just suited her to come at a later date to the State of the Union address. And that's fine. And she should be getting a pat on the back from that by these so-called feminists rather than trying to tear her marriage apart when we really know nothing about
it. Okay. Richie, Mairead, what's your take on Melania?
I mean, we had the Obamas and their...
Niamh says you shouldn't be speaking about other people's relationships, but carry on.
I know, but I mean, he's the President of the United States and he talks about family values and she goes everywhere with him and the First Lady is a very...
And she never wanted the gig, in fairness.
Big step.
No.
And then there has been questions about him and you know, the settlements and all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, it's out there and it's in the public arena. And but, I mean, just watching them and the body language and the various incidents, the hands not holding hands and things like that, hands been swept away. I mean, it doesn't look like...
Well, he held hands with Theresa May. I saw it myself.
He did.
Apparently, he has a problem with his balance or something.
And in America, I mean, the American media is not going to not...
I wouldn't be dropping Melania for May.
But I mean, a lot of what she has done seems to be deliberate statements of intent on her part in terms of putting out her own
I've grown position. To like her. I must say, over the last year, she's very popular. And I read a bit of relationship advice she gave. When she met Donald, he asked her for her number and she wouldn't give it to him. And she said that if I gave him my number, I'm just one of a bunch of women he's ringing. Whereas she waited for him to give her numbers. And so he gave her all his phone numbers.
She's nearly as manipulative as you, Marie. But anyway, okay. Speaking of America, now listen to this.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 'Cause it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Okay, the final story I want to talk about this week is that the baseball team, the Cleveland Indians, will remove Chief Wahoo logo from their uniforms from next year after Major League Baseball said it was no longer appropriate. The logo, a grinning red-faced cartoon man in a feather headband, has been used for the team logo since 1947. Meanwhile, the Washington Redskins have come under particular pressure to change their name, which half the United States Senate called a racial slur back in 2014. And to cap it all this week, the Grid Girls, which are there to add a bit of levity to the start of the tense sessions in the pit of the Formula One racing, will no longer be used at the start of the oncoming 2018 World Championship. I was saying, Niamh, that, you know, the pom-pom girls will have to be taken out of the Super Bowl, the St. Patrick's Day parade.
It'll happen.
Where do you draw the line?
It'll happen. I think they've passed it already. I think it's that there's a great type of feminism nowadays is that you're our type of woman. You're okay and you're a feminist if you're a certain type of woman. So maybe these women want to go on and dress up and become Grid Girls. Maybe they, you know, enjoy it. Maybe they enjoy the sport. Maybe they enjoy the camaraderie. Maybe they like the fact that they have fantastic bodies and look amazing, and that is one of many, many forms of power and they're able to use it. So why do they have to try and, you know, hide behind a bushel to make other people feel okay or to fit in with a certain form of feminism?
And there's a kind of dovetail of issues here. There's the kind of racial issue and the feminist issue. Where do you stand on the old Native Indians?
Yeah, I don't think that's racist either. I think we talk a lot about political correctness, but there's also a thing now where, you know, emotional correctness, you know, whether or not there's intent. So if there's intent to hurt people or harm people or, you know, mock them in any way or a particular race, or is it actually this is part of our logo, we're very proud, we wear it very proud.
And there is a historical element to it. It's not like we've invented this just to insult people now. It's part of our history. And, you know, it's like the Aborigines in that, you know, we've got to find a way of embracing our history.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely, wear it proudly, you know, as in, you know, I don't see anything wrong with that.
There's also a thing called progress and change.
Oh, here
and
we go. No,
but I mean, as like, long as we're progressing the way other people want
easy,
to progress.
It's too easy to dismiss this.
Like, okay, go for it.
The Redskins is a racist term. It is insulting to a whole group of Native Americans. They've voted on this. They've expressed their interest on this, and they've got it on to various. President Obama commented on, he said, if I was the owner, I'd probably change the name. I mean, these are right-thinking, ordinary people.
I'd say you'd be the type who wouldn't bend the knee either at the Super Bowl.
Imagine someone, we had a soccer team in the UK called the Potato potato eating patties because they had some kind of link to Ireland at some
stage. But we are called patties abroad, but it's said in a nice way. It's not said in a derogatory way.
I don't know. I mean, this is like an official team name. It's not going to take too much to change.
Notre Dame are coming under pressure to get rid of the Fighting Irish, the little leprechauns on.
Yeah, I mean, look, okay, you can argue that one. But I mean, we shouldn't be afraid of just changing something. And the history stays the same. They were the Redskins and now they've got a new name. And it happens that the new name doesn't insult a whole group of people.
What is the new name? Like, is it called the Neutral Skins? Is it no skin at all?
I'm pretty sure for a few million you'd find a very good marketing person.
No skin off my nose, Mairead.
But the other thing is the Greek girls. I mean,
the Greek girls, you have a problem with them too.
Like, you watch the motorcycle one. They stand there with umbrellas held over these multi-million earning sports stars. And in the darts, they come on with these.
Yeah, the darts were on in the Three Arena last night.
Yeah, yeah. And they do dance. And
but maybe they get paid very well to stand there with an umbrella.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
And you find it offensive.
But I don't find it.
And in the boxing, you know, they go round four, round five, and hold up the chair.
I just wonder, is it necessary? Could we change?
Would you like to get more clothes on? Would that be help?
Well, was that like? It's almost like as if they're needed to kind of sell these things. But like darts is hugely popular whether you're going to have two girls in skimpy clothes or not. You know, I just don't see why we need to have these things. Why have glamorous looking girls walking around with an umbrella held over a professional? I mean, we shouldn't be afraid of changing things.
Because they're nice to look at. And what is wrong with looking at a nice, beautiful, glamorous girl?
But why can't they be there in other roles? Like
But what's wrong with them being there in that if they get paid for it and they want to do it? Who is anybody to say you're not allowed to have that job?
What about the Diet Coke ad that has a hunk of a young man there, you know, stripping off and they're drooling over it?
All the new experiences, is it? All the new experiences, no?
No, what I'm trying to say is there are circumstances whereby it's okay to have a male model, some hunky guy.
Yeah, and do you remember the guy, the Launderette ad? The denims ad? Yeah, Levi's.
Oh, the jeans. Oh, yeah.
Sure, that absolutely took off. I'm partly with Niamh on this. Now,
you're Alana McCree's dog, a bit of the road with everybody.
I'm a bit on the road with this one because I was looking at the grid girls and, you know, some of the outfits were really smart, blazers and lovely dresses and everything. More of them were like basically athletes gear with totally different body measurements. So, you know, what was on sale was maybe their breeding capacity rather than their brains. And,
what is wrong with the fact that looks are just one part of a wide variety in a woman's arsenal that they
would
have.
Would it not be way better if one of them was driving a car? Like, would that not be way better?
Why does it have to be one or the other?
If you have an organisation and a sport which picks women over men to perform this role of standing over someone
because
with
we
an
prefer
umbrella.
Looking at women.
That sends out hairpin bends on women drivers. That sends out a signal that that whole industry is closed to the idea of women actually driving the cars.
Not at all. I just think the fact that if you're asking that we shouldn't have these beautiful women walking around in different sports. I mean, you're going to then where are you going to draw the line on the fact that sex sells? Are you never going to use a photograph of a beautiful woman in your paper to sell a paper again? Come on, you know.
Well, this argument will continue well into midnight, but that's all we've time for here on The Hard Shoulder. My sincere thanks to I'll take a moment here. Ding, ding. Mairead Lavery, Richie Oakley and Niamh Horan have been my guests on The Final Furlong, and that's our lot, not only for this show but for this week. My thanks to the entire production team. Editor Mark Simpson, producers Dan Flanagan, Emma Cawley, researchers Kira Courtney and Steve Daunt. Off the Ball is up next. Michael Quilligan, of course, was on sound. I'll be back on Monday with The Hard Shoulder from 4 p.m. Really looking forward to the rugby and the racing over the weekend. Do enjoy it and thanks for listening.